Blog Talk Radio.
That is terrifying.
Yeah.
Hello, my name is Kate Prusser, and this is the Lookout Landing Podcast. We are recording things a little bit differently this week because our guest is Tommy Romero, Mariners prospect, and he is in Arizona working out and unfortunately not near a computer. You don't have a computer on you, correct?
No, correct.
We're trying things out with a call-in format, and ideally Ben Thone, who's our minors guy, will join us here pretty soon. And ideally this is not going to be like just some kind of one-off thing, and this is actually recording right now. So we'll see. Anyway, Tommy, thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, for sure. What are you doing with your days right now? Because I know you're not in big league camp, but you are in Arizona. Tell us a little bit about what your day-to-day routine is looking like.
Yeah, so right now I'm in the mini camp. So we've just been just going over the regular practice stuff. Like, we're doing PFPs every single day. We're throwing, doing our bullpens, just kind of like, it's like an early spring training for, it's like an invite thing. So we have like 30 guys just from over the minor league system with us. So we're just doing, it's just practicing right now, waiting for our games to start up.
And, you mean the regular minor league season, right? Because that's not for like another, 40 days?
I think it's like 30 something days, but we have our spring training games coming up in like a few weeks, I think.
Oh, so you guys will have specific minor league spring training games.
Yeah.
As well.
For now we're just
like
it's like early practice.
I get it. So it's like, it's sort of a mini camp before. Now when will more guys be coming? Because 30 doesn't seem like a ton. And I know that they're borrowing guys out of minor league camp all the time to kind of fill in over at major leagues. Do you know, will a bunch of more guys be coming in for those minor league games?
Yesterday we actually sent up like 16 players. So like the MLB guys are having like their split squad games. So that's when they're sending up a bunch of guys, cause it's like half the team. So they send up as much guys as possible.
Yeah, and you get fun stuff like Michael. Do you know who Michael Coval is? He was at Clinton last year. Yeah, all of a sudden he's in a game facing Eric Hosmer. It's sort of like,
yeah, it's crazy.
He did really well though. That was, if you see him around, give him a good pat on the back from us because man, he was pretty awesome. Do you think there's any chance you could get or is that maybe? Because I know you finished up in rookie league. Maybe it's a pretty big ask to pull you out.
Yeah, I mean, I'm hoping I get the chance because I feel like it's definitely something I want to do to see if I can, like, test where I'm at, like, facing the best players and that play baseball now. I feel like if I can get that opportunity and show what I can do, it will just prove a lot of people wrong.
Yeah, and, you know, these late in the games especially, it's sort of like, you know, when you're in like the eighth inning, I follow the minor leagues pretty closely and there are guys like I have never heard of. Like I am not sure I know who Jonathan Mendoza is. I'm sorry, Jonathan. But yeah, there are some names that I don't recognize. So it sort of seems like things should be, especially because you posted some pretty good numbers down at the rookie league. You had a K9 of almost 14, and then an FIP of just barely over 3. So, and that's after coming off of finishing a pretty strong season in college as well. So, you know, it sure seems like something that would be nice to reward you. And you know, you wouldn't have high expectations, but like you said, just to kind of get an idea of where you are.
Exactly.
Well, let's talk a little bit because I think that not a ton of people know who you are. It is hard to track the guys who are in rookie league, the new draftees who haven't been in the system for a while. So information's a little thin on the ground. So why don't you tell us? I know you're a Florida boy, born and bred. So why don't you just tell us about where you grew up and how you got into baseball and where you went to high school and all that good stuff.
All right. Yeah, well, actually, I was born in New Jersey, Old Bridge, New Jersey. So I actually
not
moved to
born
Florida
in Brent,
when I was – no, pretty much. I mean, I moved to South Florida when I was about 6 months old, and I've lived in that same house until now, actually. Like, I still live in the same house that I've been growing up in. It's in Plantation, Florida. So, yeah, I've been in Florida for 20 years now. But I got into baseball pretty much. Like, my family is huge on baseball. My grandparents were born in the Bronx, so they're huge Yankee fans. My mom was a athlete in college, in high school. She played softball and tennis, and she was she could have played college tennis and softball and all that, but you know, she started working and didn't really continue it. So I feel like I get my athletic side from her. My dad played baseball growing up also, so I guess that kind of got me into it. My uncle actually played baseball too growing up. He was a pitcher, so I feel like maybe that's where I got it from, like the pitching side of it, and just how much they loved the Yankees kind of, like, it made me start wanting to be like a New York Yankees player. And I just, like, ever since then, like growing up, I've always wanted to be like a pro baseball player.
Oh, that's cool. I always like to see how many people come from, especially when their mom is an athlete too. You know,
yeah.
A lot of times we hear about dads being athletes, but not so much of it with mom.
Yeah. My
go ahead.
Yeah. Growing up, my dad would also, like, obviously, like, my coach and all that, like, he would help coach out, like, the teams I would play on, and, you know, like, he'd play catch with me and everything, but, I feel like a lot of moms don't do that. My mom would be in the backyard, like, playing catch with me, getting down, like, a catcher, like, letting me practice. So it's just, I feel like it's good to have both of the support from both of them.
Now, have you always been a pitcher? Or were
yeah,
you one of those two-way players early on?
No, actually, I've always been a pitcher early on. It's kind of, like, it's been strange. Like, my dad would always be kind of on me about it when I was in, like, Little League. He'd be like, oh, you can't put limitations on yourself. Like, you just can't be a pitcher. Like, you're so young. And I was like, no, I want to be a pitcher. Like, I don't want to, like, I don't care about playing the infield or hitting. Like, I was never good at, I was never a great hitter. Like, I had power, but I would never, like, hit the ball. So,
not so much,
like,
the
growing
contact
up, I was just, no, just, it wasn't my thing. But definitely growing up, like, I had a strong arm as a kid. So, like, when I got into a kid's hitch, like, they tried me out on the mound, and I was the only one that could reach home plate and throw strikes. So that's kind of how I got into it. And I just, like, I loved pitching so much, so I just stuck with it. I didn't really focus on anything else. And then even in high school, I didn't play, like, another position. I think freshman year I played first base, like, 10 games maybe. And, I would be, a pitcher only, like, from, like, growing up, honestly.
Who did you look up to? Who were your sort of early pitching heroes? Who'd you kind of model yourself at? Because mostly, I think often you have, like, you know, especially growing up a Seattle fan, every kid I grew up with, you know, turned their cap backwards and wanted to be Griffey.
Yeah.
And, I think people who idolize pitchers are a little few and further between. So who'd you look at?
Well, actually, growing up, I loved Derek Jeter. Like, he's still my favorite player. I mean, I just, like, just the way he carried himself on and off the field, like, I always, like, admired that. But pitching-wise, I would say I always liked Felix Hernandez, actually. Like, growing up, I used to, like, I always tried to model my game after him, and it's crazy, like, getting drafted by Seattle, and now I see him, like, all the time now in the minicamp, so it's, like, it's crazy for that.
Is that a little starstruck moment, or have you actually gotten to say anything to him?
No, I haven't actually, but I don't even know what I would say to him. Like, it's just a crazy experience all around.
Oh, I think we have Ben joining us. Ben, is that you?
Yeah. So,
hi, Ben. We're in the middle of chatting. So Ben Thelen is now joining us. Ben, Tommy, Ben.
How you doing?
Say hi to each other.
Hey, can you guys both hear me?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay,
totally.
Cool. Yeah, I was trying to connect via a laptop, and I think it was treating me as just a listener and not a participant. So, sorry for being late to the party.
That is totally fine. Tommy was just saying that he was just sucking up mightily and saying that that Felix Hernandez was his favorite pitcher growing up.
I was able to hear you guys, so I caught that. So that's good to know.
Oh, okay. That is very cool. So tell us a little bit about, like, when you started getting, I assume, kind of in high school, when you started getting really serious about having a baseball career.
I would say around my sophomore year is when I kind of started taking it, like, really serious. That year we actually had one of the best teams in South Florida, and like we have one of the toughest like districts, and I was the only sophomore that year to make varsity. So I played with a bunch of the older guys. So we actually have three kids on the team, not including me, that actually play pro baseball now. So, and like I noticed all the scouts would go to watch their games. Like I'd be young, so they wouldn't really like watch me. So I was like, you know, I need to like step it up and impress these older kids. I mean, I want to be in their shoes, and I'm a senior also. So I feel like
that
helped me a lot. Yeah,
you always want to compare yourself to the best, right?
Yeah. So, like, I noticed, like, I never had scouts at my game as, like, before sophomore year. Like, I would just, I mean, like, scouts don't really watch kids that young. So I would see all the scouts coming to watch my teammates that are going to college or going to play pro ball. And it's just, like, I was like, I want to be in this situation when I'm, like, in 2 years from my sophomore year. So I think that pushed me a lot to make me focus, work harder, and just try to pitch, like, much better, just to, like, do it for them also. I mean, knowing that they were going to sign, and just, it's just, I feel like I had to be on their level also.
Mm.
Were any of those guys drafted highly as well, or?
One of them is actually Louis Guillorme from the New York Mets.
Oh, that's a
yeah, he was my,
name.
He's my shortstop. And, we had Stephen Kerr. He signed with the Angels last year, and we actually just signed an outfielder with the Mariners this year that played. He played center field for me, so I'm gonna have my old high school center fielder with me again.
Who's that?
Jorge Solano.
Oh. Okay,
oh.
Gotcha. And then, go ahead, Kate.
Oh no, I was just saying I recognize that name. That's cool.
Is your high school kind of known as like a baseball powerhouse, or is just? Happened to be the 2 years you guys all were there.
I would say it was a powerhouse maybe when I was like freshman sophomore year, but then all those guys left, and it was just like, I mean, we were still like all right, but it wasn't like, it was never the same after all those guys left until my senior year when I would be able to carry the team. Like I was older, I could put the team on my back and kind of like I looked at it as if, like, how when I was a sophomore, I looked up to the seniors, so I wanted to, like, lead by example to the younger kids. Like, we had a really young team that year, so I wanted to show them that, like the right way to play the game, you know, like, to care. A lot of kids, I feel like they don't really care about, like, high school baseball. You know, I wanted to make sure they, like, really cared about playing and wanted to, like, move, like, play college baseball and all that.
Well, you had some big-time accolades coming out of high school, 2015 perfect game, honorable mention All-American, All-Region second team for Florida. So you wind up going to JUCO, right? You go to EFSC, East Florida State College?
Yeah.
I forget what.
I went to Polk State my freshman year, and I transferred after that year. To Eastern Florida State.
Why JUCO after all of these accolades kind of roll in? I was a little surprised to see that you didn't wind up at a D1 or maybe even a D2.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was just like I'm not really sure. I mean, I think like growing up in high school, I mean, my grades were fine. Like I wouldn't say they were the best, but definitely I would definitely be able to go to a D1 school. I just feel like a lot of coaches really didn't want to take a chance on me. Just, like, I don't know. I didn't really throw super hard, like, until my senior year. Like, I'd be, like, topping, like, 88 maybe my junior year. And, my senior year is when I started throwing, like, in the 90s. So I think it was just kind of, like, later for me. But then.
Yeah, the really perfect game has you listed in, like, 85 to 88. But you're a tall guy. You're a big guy. You have that kind of prototypical.
Yeah.
Pitcher body, and as the perfect game write-up said, you know, the velocity will come. Like, why did this kid who got these accolades, who has this prototypical pitcher body, who clearly probably has some velocity to add with some, you know, professional training, why did this person get overlooked? I just, that's so surprising.
Yeah,
I mean,
I'm not, yeah, I think it was just me kind of, like, fitting into my own body kind of late. I feel like a lot of kids that commit to, like, the big D1s usually commit around their junior year. And I committed, like, early my senior year, and it was to Polk State, and it was, like, I didn't really know anything about junior college baseball. I was like, oh, like, I hear about people talk about junior college, and it's, like it's, like, the worst baseball you can go to. But then one of my coaches, actually, for summer ball, had a connection with Polk State, and he was telling me, like, they're, like, ranked, like, top 10 in the nation, and I was like, you know, I'll just go on a visit. Like, I'll see what it's like. And, like, I love the facility there. Like, the coaches were, like, they knew what they were talking about. They looked like they were going to push me hard, and they did. And, like, so I get there in the fall, and it's just totally what, like, I'm not expecting it at all. Like, the competition was so good, and I was like, this is going to be, like, a rude awakening for me. I was like, I'm used to dominating in high school games, and now it's like, I can't even, like, throw strikes here, so... Like, it was definitely something hard, like, to get used to. But then, you know, just, like, just practicing, like, working with, like, it's just the older kids, like, pushing you to do better. It's just you don't want to look like the person that doesn't try, or, like, that went to the school, like, on a full scholarship and, like, didn't live up to that potential.
Right. Well, so then you go ahead. Sorry, Ben.
That's what I was going to ask is, it seems like you had a really good experience there. What caused you to transfer over to a different school to finish out that second year?
Yeah, it was just I didn't really like the experience I had there. I mean, like, I definitely got much better. Like, I got mentally tough. Like I would say Polk State definitely, like, prepared me for baseball after that. It didn't work out. Like, I didn't get the innings I felt like I deserved or any of that stuff. So I was like, you know, I'm just gonna transfer. Like, I'm gonna go someplace. Like, I'm gonna be happy where I play. Like, I don't want to worry about, like, impressing people. Like, I just want to go somewhere and pitch and not worry about, like, the coaches, like, getting pissed at me or something. Like, it just wasn't, like, a place that I was happy to play baseball. Like, they definitely got me better, but it wasn't, like, I wasn't having fun, I would say.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, you were putting that pressure on yourself, too, because you felt like you had to get there and kind of show up and...
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Be this person. Yeah, I think once it stops being fun, you have to do something so that to get that love back. And obviously, things went pretty well.
Yeah.
Do
you want me
to
list
off? Fall. Go ahead, Kate. If you're.
Oh, I was just gonna list off his accolades, but you can ask your question.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess mine was kind of looking forward to, you know, playing down in Arizona with the rookie ball team there. You know, the results kind of continued, which Kate was kind of alluding to, I think, but. You know, the numbers you put up in college just continue right up in pro ball. So I guess kind of just wanted to get sort of a feel for your experience playing, you know, with other professionals and if any of your teammates with that rookie league team really stood out to you or anything, or if you got particularly close with anybody.
Yeah, it was a great experience actually playing over here. I mean, it was like, it's just something I've always dreamed of. So it was like, it was kind of surreal to me. Like, my first outing, I'm pitching against the Cleveland Indians right now. Like, even it's not the MLB team, but it's like I'm wearing an MLB baseball uniform, and it's just like crazy to, like, be living in your dream.
That's awesome.
And then, yeah.
Let's back up just a second, because Ben mentioned your college accolades, and I do want to kind of go over those, because I think, again, when you're talking about a guy who maybe doesn't get a ton of recognition, these are really kind of eye-popping numbers. You had 136 strikeouts to just 14 walks. So obviously, I'm surprised Jerry DePoto didn't, like, drive to Florida and kidnap you right then. Because obviously, that's a huge point of emphasis in the organization. But the NJCAA leader in strikeouts, your 14 K9 was third in all of JUCO ball. You're the Region 8 player of the year. So just tons of, in really just sort of one short year, you just racked up all of these accolades. Did you have plans to maybe, I know a lot of guys take the path where they do 2 years at JUCO and then transfer to a different school. We have Mike Margema, the catcher, who did that with Sacramento City College, and then he switched over to Long Beach State. Actually, do you know a guy named Blair Calvo?
Yes, I do, actually.
Well, so I was just reading about him because I was doing this preview for college drafts, and I looked and saw, like, oh, he's from EFSC, and he just transferred to Pitt. So was that your plan, or did you really want to get drafted?
I mean, my plan, even going into my freshman year of college, was I want to do 1 year and get out of here. I want to sign. Like, that's what I want to do my whole life. I just want to play pro baseball. Like, I don't care what round, how much money. I just want to play professional. But then it didn't work out, obviously. So I was like, all right, like, I'm going to, like, I need to get drafted this year. Like, I mean, I always wanted to have, like, the D1 experience, I guess, but, like, nothing, like, that wouldn't outweigh, like, me playing pro baseball now. So I feel like, I mean, I was committed to University of South Florida, and I loved the school. Like, I was sold on it. I was like, all right, I'm, like, even if I get drafted, I'm going to go to school. Like, it just looked like such a, like, a nice place to be at and everything, and then it's just draft day comes around, and it's like, you're like, wow, like, my dreams are about to come true. Like, if I just agree to playing pro baseball stuff, so like, I just decided to take the pro baseball route instead of the D1 school.
So tell us a little bit about your draft day. The Mariners take you in the 15th round. You get a modest signing bonus, but I think for 15th round, it was a pretty healthy one. Like, they clearly wanted you. So take us through your draft day a little.
Yeah, well, I'm being told, like, from the year I had and, like, all the scouts talking to me, like, they were saying, like, oh, we're going to pick you in round 4 to 10, like, be ready on day 2 of the draft. So I had my whole, like, my family came over and everything, and, like, I had my friends, my girlfriend, like, my brother came home, and I was just, like, waiting for the phone call, and it just, like, I would get calls, but it wouldn't be, like, the amount of money I was looking for, I guess, because my agent was kind of telling me, like, oh, like, look for this range, and then, so I never got that. I got a few calls, but I just, like, I didn't. I was like, no, like I'm going to wait. So I ended up not getting drafted on the second day, and I was just, like, broken that day. I wanted to be alone. I was, like, I stayed in my room all day long. I was, like, in my head, I was like, what else do I need to do? Like, I had this great pitching year. Like, what else do I need to do to get drafted? And, like, so the next day comes around, and I'm, like, I didn't even pay attention to the third day of the draft. I'm, like, I'm not going to watch this. Like, at this point, they're picking kids over me, like, for no reason, really. So I get – my parents are split up, so I'm actually driving to my dad's house. It's, like, a 20-minute drive. So I'm over there, and, like, he knows I'm broken down from this, like, not getting drafted. And then we're just sitting down, and he's like, are you okay? I'm like, no, like – I was like, yeah, I'm fine. I'm going to go to school, and I'm going to get drafted next year. Like, I'm going to – like, I don't care, like, what happens. I'm going to get drafted next year. But then my agent actually calls me out of nowhere, and I was like, oh, I wonder, like – he's probably just going to tell me, oh, keep your head up. Like, there's always next year. And he was like, congratulations. And I was like, for what? And he's like, the Mariners just picked you in the 15th round. And I just, like, I got so happy at that point. Like, I was like, my whole mood changed around.
Well, they didn't have, there was no conversation. Like, because a lot of times they'll call guys and be like, hey, we're looking at you. Had you not heard from the Mariners at all?
No, they called me in a previous round, but it just wasn't for what I was looking for at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, no, but then they ended up just taking me. So I was just, like, in my head, I was like, no, like, I'm just, like, I saw all my friends getting drafted, and, like, and then I finally got the chance, and, you know, like, I was like, I don't want to go to school and, like, have all my friends be playing pro ball, and then, like, I'm a year behind them. Like, I'd rather just get into it now. Like, I know I'm ready for it. Like, I came off a good year in junior college. Like, I know it's not the D1 level, but, like, people really don't know, like, the competition level and, like, the South Florida JUCO League, so. I was like, you know, I feel like I'm ready to start my professional career.
All right, Ben, I'll let you ask all your questions now about Rookie League.
Yeah, so, I mean, you kind of touched on it already, but, I mean, I just had a – that's how I'm kind of being the site prospect guy. I was really interested just following the Rookie League team because, you know, we don't usually have a ton of access to those guys, and there's not typically, you know, a ton of, you know, footage or scouting reports on people yet, just because you guys are usually fresh out of college, but you guys had a whole bunch of guys, it seemed like, that kind of just came out and set the world on fire right out of college. So,
yeah,
I guess Do you have anybody on the team as far as, you know, other players that you kind of gravitated towards pretty quickly that you became pretty close with?
Yeah, actually, I got really close with Jorge Benitez. Actually, he's my roommate right now, and we just got really close. We were both named starters, and we piggybacked each other. So, like, we didn't have to be to the field like right away. Like, so we would hang out together before our starts, and like we just got super close. And we started building off each other, like pitching. Like, he would start, and I would come in after, and I would like. We would just, it's like a friendly competition. Like, we both want to see each other do good, but we both push each other also. We know how to, like, pick each other up if one of us does bad. Like, we like to help each other out. So, like, I feel like me and him have gotten really close.
Yeah.
It seems
and
like
I guess
a pretty
on the other
close
side of the...
knit. Oh, sorry. I was
oh,
just
you're
gonna
good.
Say,
go ahead.
It seems like a really close-knit group down there in general. The strength and
yeah.
conditioning thing. We see pictures of you guys all at, like, the Grand Canyon together and building houses together and... what's that? I know that the Mariners have put a lot of emphasis on team building. Have you ever had anything like that in your baseball career? What's that experience been like?
I really haven't had anything like this before. I feel like in junior college ball, it's all about just trying to commit to like the D1 school or getting drafted out of it. Like people don't want to like. I mean, obviously, I had a great time, like, my sophomore year. Like, I made a lot of new friends. Like, I wish I could stay there longer because I was only there for a year. But yeah, like, the Mariners are really big on that. So, it was just crazy to see, like, people, like, from all over, like, the United States, like, just get along so quick. Like, you just meet someone and, like, you know, like, you're going to be with them for, like, the next, like, year and a half, like, half a year. So, it's, like, I mean, it's just you get close to them knowing, like, you're going to be with them for, like, most of your days.
Yeah, I noticed also, I don't know how much like, overlap you had with them, but there's a few guys from the big league club that made stops there with the AZL team. I think Evan Scribner, Shea Simmons, and like Evan Marshall was down there. Did you get a chance to interact with any of those guys much, and did you really pull anything away from communicating with them?
I didn't really get a chance to speak to them, but when they would pitch, I would always obviously try to pick up as much as I can, like watching them pitch, like just how they go about their business. Like if they're pitching in a certain situation, I would see like how they just use that situation to pitch and just, they stay calm and they just like, they don't try to overdo anything. Like they just go out there and like, they're just themselves.
Who are some other names that we might not know as much because it is kind of hard to keep track of? The rookie league guys, a lot of them are younger guys. A lot of them are coming over from the Dominican, the DSL, where we really don't have, like, scouting reports or videos or anything. Who are some guys who you think are maybe, you know, obviously we all know who Sam Carlson is, even though he didn't really throw.
Yeah.
We all know who Evan White, right? Who are some guys who maybe people don't know as much who Mariners fans should keep an eye out for?
I would say Ryan Costello and Ryan Garcia. They're just, I mean, they were late picks, but I mean, they're just, like, two of the best hitters I've seen, honestly. Like they hit the ball so well. And pitching wise, I would say Sam De La Plain is really good. Me and him kind of like he would come in after me, like the games I would pitch, and it would just be like a shutdown game. Like me and him would just try to go out there and like not even let anyone hit the ball. And like he did that. So
that's cool. Well, so I saw that you've always been a starter, right? And then I saw that you weren't always starting the games in Arizona, which I figured was partially because do you know how many innings? I don't know the number off the top of my head. How many innings you pitched at Eastern Florida, but it was,
I think it was like, I think it was like 95, something like that.
Okay. I was going to guess 80 something. I thought that was the number. So anyway, that's almost 100 innings. And then you go to the AZL and you add like 40 plus 43, I think it was more on top of that. So like, that's a major league workload, right? Like that's getting close to 200 innings. So, were they just, did they kind of back you off a little bit or why?
Well, they had it as they still named me as a starter. It was just, they call it like piggybacking. So like it would pretty much be two starters. Just Jorge Benitez would start the games. I would have a few starts, but it's still like I would come in with like clean innings unless like something went wrong. So it's still like, okay, I'm kind of getting my start, but just not at the start of the game. It's not like I'm going to come in like a pressure situation, but like that would still be on like the starter, like conditioning page and like the lifts. Like I would do all the starter, like all the starter workouts and everything like that.
Just kind of managing your innings a little better then. So we should not go off of what FanGraph says when FanGraph says you didn't start X number of games. Because I was
no.
Okay, that's good to know.
And it could be deceiving. I've got to pull up his last appearance, although it wasn't a start. He came in after Ryan Weber pitched an inning, but
mm-hmm.
through six
yeah.
one-hit innings. So I guess that's technically
yeah.
a relief appearance, but it will be a start.
So what are some things, because I think a lot of people don't have video, the only scouting report is from, 4 years ago or whatever the perfect game one is. Tell us about you as a pitcher. What do you throw and what are you working on? Tell us what your approach is to pitching too.
Yeah. Well, my approach is just like, people tell me not to think about this, but my approach is to try and like, I try to strike everyone out. Like that, I just don't want anyone to make contact like with the ball. Like growing up, that's just been like my whole like problem. I would just people would like make contact and my infield would like make errors. Like it's just been like my life story, honestly. It was just, so I was like, I always just growing up, like don't let the infield get the ball. So like, I mean, now at this point I don't have to do that because obviously I have like a great infield here. So like they don't make the errors. So now I feel a little more relaxed, but I would say I try to attack the zone. I try to throw a lot of strikes and I try not to fall behind. Like the Mariners are really big on first pitch strikes and winning 1-1
yeah.
counts. So I try to follow that. I mean, I want to impress them and throw the ball as hard as I can and see like what it can do. But I know they're so big on people throwing strikes and they don't really care about like the stuff you have as long as you can throw strikes. So I feel like that fits into like my game because I throw a lot of strikes. So I feel like it's like a fit like plan for me.
So you are.
I'm like looking at your game log. I thought that this was like a typo for a second. I see you had a three and two thirds inning outing where you struck out 10.
Mm-hmm.
There were a couple times at Eastern Florida where this resonates with a lot of Mariners fans. I think twice. You struck out 11 batters over the course of the game, and your team lost both those games. How do you lose a game where your pitcher gives you 11 strikeouts?
That's,
I understand.
Like, that's
like you're controlling
like
what
I get
you can
back
control.
To,
What's
yeah,
that?
It's like I've had to learn to deal with that type of stuff. Like I said, growing up, like there'd be a bunch of errors, like when I would pitch, and it would just. Like when I like at my sophomore year of college, I just had to learn like all right, like if there's people watching, they know that's not, they know like I'm not getting beat. It's just
right.
Maybe like my team isn't scoring that day, but I mean you can't blame them. It's, I mean, like I don't like to put the blame on anyone. It's just you win some and you lose some. There was times I pitched and I struck out six batters and we won the game. I gave up four runs and we win. But then there's times I don't give up any earned runs and we. Like lose still, so I don't know. It's just a crazy game.
Yeah, you can't pay attention. I mean, we all know that pitcher wins are a poor statistic, but
yeah,
you can't pay attention to that. But I do. I think it's interesting the idea that has shaped who you are as a pitcher, how you
mm-hmm.
pitch. I know you have the fastball. It's maybe not the fastest fastball out there. You're not
mm-hmm.
blazing it up there at 95 or whatever.
Yeah.
But you are depending a lot on your location.
Mm.
And is there some deception to it? Or what do you do with sort of a fastball that's not a blow away triple digit fastball? What do you think makes that fastball effective that helps you get so many strikeouts?
I would say it's just my delivery, like the deception part of it. Cause I, the coaches here, like, they say the same thing. Like, they say, like, your fastball is not, like, an overpowering fastball. It's just the way I pitch, like, my arm comes, like, straight behind my body, like, and it follows up my whole head until, like, I release the ball. So it's, like, you really can't even see, like, my arm until my hand is, like, out to throw the ball. So they say that has a lot to do with it. They say, like, you strike out so many people because they can't even see the ball until it's, like, at the plate pretty much. So, I mean, although it might be, like, a 90 to, like, 93 mile per hour fastball, like, it looks much harder, like, to the hitter, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, just the coaches here, they say, like, my fastball has, like, a really high spin rate. So they kind of, like, they say, like, it rises a little bit. So, that, like, they have me pitch up in the zone a lot because I could throw that 90 mile per hour fastball, like, at their shoulders, like, over the plate, and it just looks like a fastball that they can hit, and it just, like, goes straight over the bat.
You know, that's really interesting, because I was just going to ask you what kind of advanced, if they're using advanced metrics down there, and what kind of access you guys have to it, because they've definitely done a lot. You know, Nick Vincent on the big league team is a kind of the classic example of a guy who doesn't have the world's fastest fastball, but is able to put so much deception on it with his spin rate and just really fool batters and induce a ton of, if he does get contact, you know, it's weak fly ball contact.
Yeah.
Occasionally the balls go over the fence, but you know, what are you going to do? but he jams a lot of guys too, and he gets a lot of ugly swings on that. So I was interested. It does seem like that's something that they kind of pride now. And he's got that, and then he's got the slider, and like really with just two pitches is able to be really effective. What have you got as far as secondary pitches? I know you've got a pretty sharp curveball. Is that right?
Yeah, I actually throw a regular fastball, and I throw a sinker, and I throw a curveball slider. And I have two different grips for my changeup that I throw, one to lefties and one to righties. Or I can mix it up. It's like two changeups, I would say.
So that's four pitches? I've lost count. So you've got the fastball, you've got the sinker. You've got the change, you've got the curve slide. Is it a slurve then?
Well, my curveball is kind of like a slurve. Like, my curveball is a little, like, slurvy, but then my slider is more of, like, a true slider. And it's just, I don't really look at it the way it moves. It's just, like, the velocity it has. Like, my curveball is, like, 74 to 76, but then my slider is, like, 84 to 86. So it's, like, like they move the same way, but it's like the same pitch. So it's like, I mean, if they're looking for like the slower one and it's a harder one, like they're just late on it. So I use the slider kind of like later in counts, like because it's sharper and it like I'll get more like easy contact, like double plays or strikeouts, swing and misses. Like I use my curve more as like a 0-0 count, like to try to get ahead, because I feel like a lot of people don't really expect like a first pitch like slow curveball like that.
What are the Mariners working with you on? I know that one of the things that they're kind of emphasizing with player development is setting benchmarks, not that, that aren't necessarily the same benchmarks for every player. Like we want everybody to throw a fastball at this speed, like, that they're trying to tailor a program to each guy. So like, what are the things that you're working on?
Well, there's like a little bit delivery things that they want me to work on. It's kind of like when I lift my leg up, I kind of like fall forward, like and rush to home plate. So they kind of have me working on that and kind of like pushing over my backside more, like on my like push off leg. So those are like the two things I've been working on, like especially in the mini camp. Like we have early work and I've just been doing the like towel drills, like just working on my mechanics, just trying to like fix that so I can like just become better.
That's cool. I know that they did away with instructs this year. There was no instructional league. And they replaced that with, it seemed like a strength and conditioning camp. Were you at that?
Yeah.
Do you know about
that?
Just like, that's not something anybody else in baseball is doing, and it's a decision that I think has been regarded with a little bit of like raised eyebrows around. So I was just wondering on what you found useful out of that, or maybe in talking to some other guys with different organizations, do you wish there were instructionals? Do you wish there were those games situations, or did you find it useful to do whatever it was you guys were doing?
I think it was definitely more useful for the high performance camp just because after throwing that many innings without really a break, like, I don't want to go back there and throw more innings. Like, it just, like, you really don't, you don't get, like, that break. Like, as a pitcher, like, you need to, like, give your arm a break. So it's just, like, I was, and my, like, my weight was kind of, like, up. So I really was excited to go there. And I lost, like, 20 pounds. I got more muscular. So, like, now I'm just, I feel like that's going to translate more into the game than going to instructs and throwing, like, 10 innings. I feel like the high performance camp is much more, it's more of a benefit towards players.
You lost 20 pounds?
Yeah.
Well, teach me your ways. I know that they emphasize the nutrition and stuff a lot. Was that mm-hmm. anything you had heard before, or was that mostly new? That shaped how you eat every day?
It's kind of always something I've heard. I've always been kind of like on the heavier side, not like super like out of shape, but definitely like if I could have lost that weight earlier and looked better in front of scouts, I think that would have changed a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, definitely like over here, it's definitely easier to have like a better diet just because like the cooks over here, like they're always cooking up stuff that's like healthier for us. It's not like we're going out to eat like just junk food every day. So it was like coming to the camp, it helped because that's all that they focused on, the nutrition a lot and just the working out, like, and I, seeing the results definitely pushed me to do harder. And then going home, I kept up with it. And it was just, I'm just happy I went to it because now I feel like I could be at the top of my game now, like more athletic and stronger. I'm excited to see like what this year has in store for me.
Yeah. Ben, do you have any other questions that you want to ask about?
I don't even know if you are at liberty to disclose this to us, but do you have any type of idea where you'll be starting the season out at?
I'm not 100% sure where I would be, but the Clinton coaches were keeping in touch with me over the off season, and like we filled out like a medical questionnaire, and it said my team was Clinton Lumberking. So I'm hoping that's where I end up. I mean, I'm hoping I can do good enough.
Yeah, selfishly we want you with Everett so we can get you see you with our own eyes a little more. But I guess getting you to the big leagues quicker would be a good compromise for us, I suppose.
Yeah, that Clinton pitching staff I think could probably use you too, because they had a little bit of a rough year last year. And still, I mean, I would expect Clinton seems like a good guess that I don't know that short season would really do a lot for you other than put you in
mm-hmm.
against the same college guys that you, you know, kind of played against.
Yeah.
So probably Clinton at a minimum. So what's your goal then? Do you have like a goal in mind if you do get assigned to Clinton? Like, what are you targeting? You know, obviously then you want to get moved up to high A and then you want to get moved up to double A.
Yeah.
It's like, what are your goals for the upcoming year?
I just want to just continue how I've been pitching. I'm trying not to really change much. I just want to keep staying on the same line I've been on since my sophomore year of college to the rookie ball league. I don't want to really like a big thing that they preach over here is just like not changing who you are, like no matter the competition. Like they tell us, like the kids that have been going up to the MLB spring training games, they say like don't try to like overdo it. Like it's the same pitches that are going to get hitters out, and the minors are going to get the major league hitters out. So I mean, I just want to go over there and be the same pitcher I have been. I want to be one of the top starters there. I mean, I need to work hard for that. So I just want to be like the pitcher they depend on to win the games for them.
Great. All right. Well, Ben, you got anything else to ask Tommy about?
No, that kind of does it for me.
Yeah. It is really cool to get kind of this peek into the organization on the lower levels, because, you know, we sort of, we know about Tacoma because it's right here. We have that fair amount of access to Everett, but it seems like the Mariners are doing a lot at, specifically a lot around the Peoria complex, where they are really just implementing all this new stuff, all this high performance stuff that, you know, we kind of haven't seen before. And it's not that it's secret. It's just not, not something that we totally know about, because we're not in contact with the people who are coming out of those camps right now. So it's really cool to hear something like, you know, you went, how long was that? Was that the fall? It was happening at the same time as the Arizona Fall League, I want to say.
Yeah, it was.
I know
it
you
was,
guys all went out for
there,
Braden Bishop's thing. The
walk yeah, we
for
were
Alzheimer's
there for,
or whatever.
Yeah, we were there for like 6 weeks. It was like a 6 week camp.
Well, that's, and you lost 20 pounds in 6 weeks.
Yeah.
I could keep going back to that because that is dramatic.
Yeah, I was
and
surprised.
You must feel great.
Yeah, I was so happy that I went to it.
Was it the kind of thing where when you got off the plane in Florida, people were like, damn, Tommy?
Yeah, they were, actually. It was, like, I was kind of, like, embarrassed. I was like, was I that big before?
No. I'm sure. It's like, that is awesome. Because I know it's hard to be away from home and family, and obviously, like,
mm-hmm.
your family mentioned your girlfriend. You know, distance is challenging. So it's nice to know that all this hard work is paying off in very real ways, right?
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us and talking to us. And we wish you the best, and we'll be watching to see if maybe you get to sneak into one of these spring training games.
I'm hoping so.
And we'll be looking out for you next year, too, because it sounds like there are some big things ahead for you.
Thank you.
Maybe. The fine people at Fangraphs will even see it fit to make a mention of you rather than some guy who's not on our team anymore. I was so mad. I was so mad, Tommy. I was mad. I was mad on your behalf about that.
Yeah, I try not to pay attention to that. I mean, I notice it, but I don't care. It's just I go out there and I know I'm doing my part, so I hopefully someone notices one day.
Well, there's a balance, right? We do notice. There is a balance, right, between, like, being mad about stuff and having a little bit of a chip on your shoulder that motivates you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, using that energy in a positive direction. And it
definitely
sounds...
Push me.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like that's something that, you know, is in the back of your mind when you get up on the mound, like the scouts that overlooked you and the prospect writers that have overlooked you and... you know, so it'll be, we're definitely rooting for you and rooting for your success.
Thank you.
All right. Well, this has been the Lookout Landing podcast with our guest, Tommy Romero. Tommy, for people who want to follow you, tell them where they can find you on Twitter or whatever.
Twitter is TommyR55 and my Instagram is Tommy Rowe underscore.
And do you have one of them that you prefer more than the other? I know all the kids like the Instagram.
I mean, I use both equally, I would say. I mean, both. I'm on them both every day. So
I always appreciate when I see you retweet something about Greg Maddux or something about you always seem to have your head in pitching. And when you post that little sad boy emoji waiting for the season, missing baseball, like, that is extremely us. It's always nice to have somebody around who, like, just genuinely loves the sport as much as we do.
Mm-hmm.
So that's exciting. All right. Thank you again so much, Tommy Romero. Thank you, for hosting. And we will be cheering for you, and we will talk to you guys all next week.
All right. Thank you guys for having me again.
No problem. Thank you.
Bye.